Welcome to the Association Strong podcast, where we offer insight from both a seasoned association exec and an entrepreneur. I'm Dave Will.
And I'm Tom Morrison. Listen in as we discuss and debate hot topics in the association community. Don't forget to subscribe and share us with your friends.
Tommy Bahami, here we are again.
Hello, Dave. We're back at it, man. Love talking to you. Love talking to our guests, man. Today, it's a hazy day out here in Nashville, so I'm looking for something to spark my interest, and I'm excited to talk with Hardy today, just because everybody that listens to this can equate to one thing. They can all relate to a dysfunctional board or a board member. And I have this great saying that we can build off of, Hardy, that, you know, my key is called WTF, what the fact. And it's a fact that
that's not what it is.
That's what I call it, though, because then I can put WTF and actually say it out loud in front of a crowd. Here's a motto about boards that I developed years ago, and it's
Can we introduce Hardy first? You're getting deep into the board discussion. Nobody even knows who Hardy is or what he's doing here.
Hardy, I did this for a reason, because the one thing me and Dave do is we fight for attention.
We discuss things. We've known each other a long time.
That sounded like a fight there a second ago. But anyway, I digress. Let's go back. Let's restart. Let's get in and introduce Hardy. So Dave, you got the floor, my man.
Listener, we have our guest here. His name's Hardy Smith. And I think what intrigued us, Tom sent me a note that he received from Hardy's publicist, I think it was, or somebody Hardy knows. And Tom's like, hey, this guy might be interesting to have on the podcast. And as I dug in, there's a very clear message of what the topic's going to be today. And Tom's already drilled down into it. Hardy wrote a book called Stop the Nonprofit Board Blame Game. And so Hardy has been on tour for several years, 15 plus years. You've been working as an author and a consultant and a keynote speaker, with a strong emphasis on understanding the nature of nonprofit boards and working more effectively with them. Is that a fair statement, Hardy?
100% on target. Thanks very much.
And so welcome. Thank you for joining us. And again,
absolutely. Thank you.
What's the year? When did the book come out?
I'm celebrating the second anniversary of publication. So I'm 2 years, 2021 or 2022.
Okay. So it's fresh. This book is not
fresh. Yes, very fresh.
This isn't something from 20 years ago. This is a relevant book called Stop the Nonprofit Board Blame Game. And again, it's Hardy Smith. But Hardy, here's something I think is really interesting about you, and you have no shame in sparking a lot of conversations about this. You got 30 some odd years at NASCAR.
Yes.
Explain to me how you go from NASCAR to nonprofit boards. I mean, to me, it's almost like polar opposites.
But isn't NASCAR a nonprofit?
No. It is probably the only major sport in this country that is a for-profit. It's the only, all the other racing organizations, NHRA, IndyCar, everybody else is a nonprofit, but NASCAR is for-profit.
I didn't know that.
Those France boys were smart.
They were smart, and I was very fortunate at a very young age to have them take me under their wing and afford me a number of amazing learning and experiential opportunities. And I take all of those lessons and apply those now to the world of nonprofits.
No, hold on. I need to go back to this for a second. Then we'll get back to you, Hardy. So I never thought about sports teams, or not teams, about sports leagues being nonprofits. Now, of course, you have the NBA. National Basketball actually has the word association in it. It never even struck me after 20 years of working in associations. It never
PGA?
Struck me. Okay.
How about the NFL?
Well, that's a league. So are you telling me
nonprofit?
All of these are nonprofits. Yeah. They're member-based organizations, and I'm assuming the members are the teams?
It depends. In the National Football League, the members are the team owners.
And I'm assuming they probably have a lot of different member types. Maybe there's other member types like partners and or is it really just like a 20, 30 person member organization?
It's a closed loop in the NFL. It's the team owners make up the National Football League.
But there's also a players association, because you'll hear all the time the right tackle for, like, Jeff Saturday that used to play for the Colts. He was on the board of the NFL Players Association.
That's their
So,
union.
and then you got the PGA. If you go to the Professional Golf Association, you'll hear them talk about certain golfers that are on the board or on the executive team of the PGA for the players.
And
All right, so.
my experience is that it really parallels the long time experience in NASCAR, high performance world in NASCAR racing, Dave, parallels literally a lifetime of involvement with nonprofits, associations, chambers of commerce, community groups, and nationwide. And in my work with NASCAR, and I wasn't a driver, I get asked that a lot. And as soon as people find out, well, no, I wasn't a driver, that usually ends their interest. But I was a back of the house. My role was to identify problems before they existed and make sure they didn't happen. And if a problem did slip through the cracks, I was darn well better sure make sure it disappeared quickly. So that was my role. And in that
Can you be more
role,
specific about that? When you say a problem, I mean there's I one would argue that our days are spent navigating problems. So like what give me an example of the kind of problem that you
certainly.
would try to
It, well,
avoid.
in the world of NASCAR racing, I worked. I started out in Talladega at the Speedway there. They moved me to the corporate operation in Daytona Beach, where I'm based today. But in that time, I worked nationwide, and every state, state capitals, and had an office in DC, worked in Congress. I was a lobbyist. And so it could be a tax issue, it could be a zoning issue, it could be any kind of business related issue that happens to every single business. Most folks aren't aware how big of a business NASCAR racing is. And we have operations in 50 states. So dealing with, legislation in California, legislation in DC, legislation in Florida, all of just whatever might come up. My job was to anticipate situations. I was involved in the big buildup of the sport itself. When I started working with International Speedway Corporation, which was the owned by the same people, but that was the promotional arm of NASCAR. NASCAR sanctioned events. International Speedway Corporation put on the events. I worked for both companies, same ownership group. And the International Speedway Corporation was three tracks, Talladega, Daytona, and we just purchased Darlington. And I was involved in the run-up of the big unrestricted growth of the NASCAR period. So a lot of activity going on, a lot of issues to deal with, but that was my involvement. And I always taught part of that mindset. I think Tom's a car guy, so he knows that you win on Sunday, and you tear down your engine because you want to make sure you can repeat that success the next Sunday. Well, if you finished second through 40th, you were considered a loser. So it's not, and then so you tear down your engine because you want to find out why you lost, and you want to make sure you don't ever lose again. So it's a contrarian, challenging, accept but verify world that is that of NASCAR racing, especially the behind the scenes part. And that's what I bring to the table because I was involved with associations and nonprofits personally and professionally all during my career with NASCAR racing. So it's been a long time involvement with with both of those avenues.
You know what Hardy just said in a roundabout way? It's the most famous quote in all of NASCAR. If you're not first, you're last.
Ricky Bobby. There you go.
If you're number 2 through 40, you lost. So if you're not first, you're last.
I didn't that's want right. to be the 14-year-old boy that brought up Talladega Nights, but that's about all of my education on NASCAR has pretty much come from that movie.
Right.
Oh, there you go.
So tell me a little bit about this transition of going from NASCAR, and it wasn't directly from NASCAR. I mean, you worked for the city of Daytona Beach. You worked at the Institute of Organization Management. Before you started your consulting business, and your consulting business really is where you became the keynote speaker, trainer, consultant, and of course the author. Specifically of this book that we're talking about today, Stop the Nonprofit Board Blame Game. So how do you go from your background to focusing on nonprofit boards? It's a very specific topic.
Well, great question. And I appreciate you trying to tie in some parallels. However, in my role for NASCAR, I was, again, working with community groups nationwide. It might have been about a referendum for a new track or an issue, but working with community groups, and again, both professionally and personally. So I was still very much involved with volunteer groups all over the country, and speaking and training. I was involved back in the day in the JC organization, and worked nationwide and I in that organization as a speaker and a trainer. So I'm not doing, when I started my consulting business and speaking, professional speaking business, the only real difference was that I was doing it for myself and not for someone else. And so when the opportunity came that I would be able to set up my own business, which I had been working for some time, it was a very natural transition. And I like working with nonprofit organizations. And that's where I focus my, consulting business. Rather than a for-profit business, I could have easily gone down that path. But the nonprofits is where I find a whole lot of joy in working. And it was also became very clear that, when anytime you start a business, Tom will tell you, what's the 101? Well, who's your audience and what's their pain point? Well, I knew who my audience would be, and that's the world of nonprofits. And there are two main pain points my experience tells me about the world of nonprofits. One, they don't have enough money, and of course they never will. And then number two, constant frustration because board members don't do what they're supposed to do. And there might be a third pain point, and that's board members who don't do fundraising. So I didn't really want to get into the fundraising business. I've done a whole lot of political fundraising back in that previous world I was coming from. And I figured I'd just leave that up to the professional fundraisers. But I was very intrigued around the frustration about nonprofit board engagement or lack of. And I'm just the more and more and more, I'm seeing the blogs, I'm seeing the books, I'm seeing the webinars, and this thing is really something. And I was, what really kicked off the research that ended up being the book, Dave and Tom, is I was doing a training program, about 100 people. And I was kind of shocked, but I was about 10 minutes early with my content. And I'm like, wow, I'm like 10 minutes early. Usually I'm struggling to not be 10 minutes over, right? And so I said, okay, let me ask just a quick question and maybe we can solve a problem here for the group. So I asked the group, just see about 100 nonprofit CEOs in the room. I asked the group, okay, what's your number one problem? And let's see if we can try to get some answers. And it was like they yelled it out. And it is like, those board members, why don't board members do what they're supposed to do? And it, two things happened. There was like a force. They all answered like it was scripted and practiced. And I wish I had scripted and practiced it because it'd been a great video, right? But it just came back at me. It's like, whoa, I took a step back. And then as soon as the room realized that they had just shared out loud their number one problem, that they probably all knew they had, but they just hadn't said it out loud, the room just went into a buzz. And I said, oh, I got, there's something here. I've got to find out what this is. So I launched off into a research project, just asking board members, not staff, board members across the country that I had developed a network with, just what's up with this? Why don't board members do what they're supposed to do? And they told me. So I started putting together, I did an open-ended, very crude survey. I'm not a professional survey person. I would not pass that test whatsoever. But with open-ended questions and then open-ended responses that came back, I said, wow, they're all saying the same thing. So they identified some of the key issues that causes good board members to turn off and why they may have done what they were supposed to do, but stop doing it. Okay. And then I started speaking about this and then offering solutions, writing about it in my own articles and newsletters, LinkedIn posts. And then that's what eventually led to the book. And the basic premise that I'm trying to help fix is that in the world of nonprofits, it seems like we as a group, as a community, we insist on following the same best practices, and we're hoping they're going to get a different result, and they don't. So we all know that quote, right? And I said, I've got to offer something different. So what's different about the book is it's from the board member perspective. The board members are telling the reader of the book why they don't do what they're supposed to do. And then I come in with the how-tos. And here's how you can fix it. And here's how you can make the change. Here's how you can get a high value, positive and productive, high performance board that your organization wants. And it applies to nonprofits, associations, and chambers of commerce.
So what was...
That's the backstory.
Hardy, what? Because here's a quote I was going to get to that I came up with a number of years ago that for a lot of boards. When the personality gets in the way of the purpose, it's the beginning of the end of the purpose. Because board members come in with their own agenda. They come in with their own experiences. They come in with, you know, you got somebody that served on their local charitable organization where they're used to doing a lot of the work because they don't have big staffs. And then they join a group like ours, a National Trade Association, that has a full-blown staff that does the work and the board is strategic. And all of a sudden they put their hands in it and get way too engaged, and they're not thinking strategically, they're getting into the weeds, but just those experiences. And so that's something I think, first off, a person had to realize is that you have to get your board to walk through the door and check their ego and their agenda at the door. And I've been very fortunate for 17 years here at MTI that our board has done a phenomenal job of putting the industry and their needs first. And I've even had board members call people out that, look, that doesn't belong in the boardroom. That's not about the industry, that's about you. So what are some of the big key thing? I'm interested to hear what the board members said about why they stopped being engaged.
And that's Thank you for sharing that example, because that's a great one. And to answer your question, I'm going to ask our audience, folks who would be listening today to the podcast, and thank you all for being with us.
I love how you assume there's more than one.
Well, there's at least two. So
Tom and me.
Right. So that just doubled it 100%. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to challenge. I'm going to push you a little bit. I'm going to go NASCAR contrarian on you. And I'm going to say there's a whole lot of finger pointing at those board members, like you just did a little bit, Tom, right? About that board member that comes in with these preconceived ideas and they're all wrong. Well, let's kind of start earlier in the journey. How did a board member who could be misguided, misinformed, uneducated, just be the wrong fit? How did they get that far in the process anyway?
Right.
How did they get there? So look.
Because some of those people end up not just getting on your board, they end up getting into the chairs and rising to presidency.
Oh yeah. And that's I share that in the book, and it's a huge problem. But let's talk about in the beginning. How did a board member who's just not a good fit, could be a for a lot of, how did they ever get there to start out with? And I'm going to suggest that organizations, board leaders themselves, current board leaders, professional staff, look in the mirror. Look at your recruitment process. And I'm an advocate of recruit with purpose and process. And I outline the steps for how to do this and avoid the recruitment mistakes. You know, it's an HR thing. If you go to your HR department, they're going to say, hey, Tom, don't hire a problem, right? Well, why not apply that same discipline and mindset to board recruiting?
Right.
Don't recruit a problem. So we could have a whole program about recruiting right, hiring right for board members, but it starts with our practice of, in way too many cases, plenty of examples of people who do get it right. But for far too many organizations in the nonprofit sector, we just mess it up. We are not intentional about who our future board members are. And then the next mistake that happens, and you would have kind of touched on this a little bit in this board member that you've got, that was the case study you shared. Well, how about getting clarity? Get clarity on what expectations are. And when you're communicating, here's what the expectations are, Dave, for you being a part of our board. Stop talking. And why would you stop talking? You want to hear what Dave's expectations are about serving on the board and what his thoughts are for the organization itself. And if those two expectations don't meet, or you can't find a way for them to marry up, then does Dave come on the board? No. Here's the big mistake that happens. And it's like amazing how this works. When we're having the conversation with a prospective board member, all too often, we don't share what the expectations are. We just, hey, wow, we'd sure like to have you on our board. We know you'd be great. And here's the first meeting. And that's it. Why wouldn't you have that conversation? Why wouldn't you communicate what the expectations are? Any idea?
Well, I'm thinking through our process and, who would you say should be? So I think that we're using NASCAR professional sports analogy. So think of a baseball team and you got a scout who's scouting for talent for the baseball team.
Right.
Who do you feel should be the number one scout for potential new board members down the road? Who would you think that'd be?
Well, my answer is no hesitation, the entire team. So it's the professional staff, and not just from the executive director of the CEO level spot, but all members of the staff. And I'll explain that, and also all members of the board. And so you're and I like the sports analogy because I'm a college sports nut. I like specialize in basketball right now and in football. And then so like there's a 10 or 12 game season, 20 games, 30 games in basketball, right? But then there's a recruiting season. So until the portal messed it all up. So but there's like a season for all that. And I know from coaching youth basketball here in Daytona Beach that when we had a team of 6th, 7th, and 8th grade boys on a travel basketball team, just good kids, not a great team. We got to where we were doing all right and actually nationally ranked. But we'd take one or two trips, like over to Disney and Wide World of Sports. We'd come up to Jacksonville to play in some pretty big tournaments up there. And so it was 6th, 7th, and 8th grade boys. Now pay attention to this, our association leaders that are listening. We had Division I college top program basketball scouts. I'm talking Duke, North Carolina, Stanford, UCLA, you name it, University of Florida, Florida State. They're coming to our games to scout players. Now, they weren't looking at our players. They were looking at the players we were playing against, like the Jack Lee Bulls there in Jacksonville, powerhouse program since forever. But that's division, and I'm not talking their scouts. I'm talking about the head coach. It was like they were an attraction. We also had NBA scouts that were there. And so they're coming to see 6th, 7th, and 8th grade boys, and they're already projecting them to be major prospects by the time they come out of high school, you know, 4 or 5 years later. Why not do that with board members? Why not have your farm team out? You know, baseball has got a fantastic farm team, and read Moneyball or see the movie and you see the scouts, story about the scouts and all that. And they're watching kids play, and then they come all the way on up through the youth leagues and high school and college and ready for the draft. Why not do that with your board members? Why not look out there, look to your membership, who's being active, who's an active member, who's showing some interest, who's coming to the conferences and conventions, and who's getting involved as a volunteer. And you start looking and looking and looking, and you put those, get your whiteboard out, and you put your prospects out there. And way before a vacancy comes, because you, an organization like yours, Tom, I would imagine is buttoned up as you are, you're going to know when your board vacancies come up.
And absolutely.
So you can plan ahead, and you're providing potential board members, the training and experience they need. Hey, Dave might be good for our board, but he's 2 or 3 years away. So let's make sure he attends. Let's send him to the ASAE great training activity that helps board members really kind of acclimate to what serving on a board is all about, and those kind of opportunities. Let's get him into a leadership role as a volunteer, and let's test him out. Let's see how good he really is. And if he kind of, you know, messes things up, or he isn't showing the leadership skills, may not be the positive leader, or he's ready to just come in and run things, might not be a good fit. But wouldn't it make sense to figure that out on the front end, as opposed to after he says, I do? Now, let's get back to my question.
You said, why not? Oh, wait, hold on. I think you're going to go back to two questions ago. But Tom took us down a rabbit hole. You said, why not do that? Why not recruit the same way UCLA and UConn? And
that's it.
And I say UConn because that's my my alma mater, and they're ranked number one, I'm pretty sure.
They're kind of good, right? All year in, year out, men and women.
So I'll tell you why not. And the why not comes from two sides. Number one is UConn has scouts, and it's their job to scout. Associations sure. don't have someone whose job it is to scout board members. Associations have okay. staff. You said earlier they're limited on money, although the association executive we interviewed yesterday took his association $30 million to $130 million in less than 5 years in revenue. I would argue there's money out there. We're just not looking for it the right way. Different right. conversation.
Right.
But the point is, there's a lot of people, a lot of association staff members, all the way up to the executive director, that are doing the jobs of 10 people. And okay. so to tell them, hey, you know, why don't you just do a better job recruiting board members? Like, it just takes a little more time and effort. Just do that. And then the other side of it is you're looking at the members, and I'm a member of a local board for my association. And I can tell you, for us, it's actually really difficult to find somebody that's willing to do it, let alone find the right yep. person to do it.
Yep.
So like yep. that's why, because of limited resources, time and people. So
but let me push back on that just a little bit, Dave. I very rarely push back on stuff you say, but let me push back on this, because I think the CEO, the staff is great to be helping recruit, but you know, they don't really have the relationship that a CEO does. The board can recruit, but the board's not privy to everything that a member has going on. So through their lens, that guy might be a great potential board member in his eyes, but there's other things. He just comes to two national meetings, so they think he's totally engaged, and he's engaged in nothing. He just comes to meetings, but they think he is. When you're seen to be engaged. I feel like it's the CEO's responsibility to be the number one scout, because guess what? We're just a small association. I make a conversational engagement on board stuff with members as a natural part of me, because I'm out with members all the time at meetings, connecting with them, talking on the phone. And so what I do is I basically try and identify people who run good businesses. You can see how they think because they make decisions in certain ways. And I'll say, you know what, Dave, you look like someone that our board would think would be great to serve the industry and be on our board. And you know what I've found from a lot of people, especially more introverts and some people that there's just, unfortunately, there's people that have somewhat of a low self-esteem, even though they run companies. And they'll say, Tom, I just don't ever think I'm really good enough to be on the board. And I'm like, you're kidding me. You run a successful business. You treat people well. You think big picture. You're so, and why the CEO to make that, have that conversation? Because we're privy to those high-level conversations. We get to see reports that show us their engagement, where we can see across the big board how engaged they are, what they're doing. And if they've served on a committee, you get the sense of how they think. So I think a CEO, because he or she has a vested interest, because they have to work with the board, and that's actually their boss, the whole board. So I think they should develop some natural conversational platform that they have conversations with members as they're just talking regular stuff, to figure out, to say if they should or should not say, Dave, I think you'd be really good serving our board. We got a position coming open in 2 years. What about you think about that? And do what you're saying, Hardy, start the conversation, start the thinking. Because I've had three people on the board right now that said that same comment to me. Tom, I just don't know if I'm that. I don't know if I'm that good a guy to be on the board. I'm like, you absolutely are. They just needed a push to really understand that they do have that capabilities. So I think, to me, I think it's the CEO's job to be the number one scout, because you said it yourself. The head coaches came to the game, not just the scout. So I think the CEO, the head coach, or the executive director, whatever the title is, they need to make a presence to reach out to whatever board seats are coming up doing 2 years. They need to be reaching out to six different candidates that they identify. They really have everything. They just need an encouraging word to help them want to think about it.
Let me partially, mostly agree with Tom, and then I'll join the pile on Tom on Dave. How about that? This will be fun. So number one, clarify what I said was, and the question was who should be involved, and I said everybody. So to narrow that focus down, which is Tom, is what I think I heard what you said. Who is the identified the number one recruiter? And yes, Tom, right there with you, buddy. That CEO, executive director, got to be the number one. What I'm an advocate for is using your entire network, not just so you don't necessarily need your social media coordinator out recruiting board members for the association. I'm just
right.
saying, have the radar up, pay attention, funnel, act as a funnel and funnel
right.
in names. And you're exactly right. Even board members don't always, that's part of the reason we have some of the challenges we have, because they don't know what they're supposed to do. Now, why not, Dave? I'm going to, can I just say, I'll call BS, just like really stir the pot, that you're way too busy. You're doing too much. You don't have enough people, all that. Okay. Right. I hear what you're saying. Let me just push back with this. You're the one telling me how much frustration you're having because of your board members. They're not engaged. They're getting in the way. They're too engaged. You're the one telling me you're frustrated. So I'm trying to help you. And the answer to you saying you're just too busy, or any executive director that's saying, great, Hardy just loaded us up with more stuff to do. My challenge is this, with this question, how bad do you want it?
Yeah.
How bad do
yeah.
you want to get rid of all of that frustration? And this is what the book does. It walks you through it, and it shows you how to look. And there's a good bit of blame. The journey to find out the answer to this very compelling question had this amazing reveal. So the nonprofit professionals, association leaders, chamber of commerce directors, they're all pointing that finger at their board members, and they're not doing what they're supposed to do. And then the board members told me the reason they're pointing the finger back at the association professionals, the nonprofit professionals, it's their fault. I'm not having the board experience that I expected, and that's why I'm turning off. So that's why on the cover, you've got the two fingers of blame, the blame game. That's where the whole title came from.
So you had a question earlier, about 15 minutes ago.
Yeah.
That Tom took into like a different area. The question was, do you remember what the question was? I think you
the
were
the question
take
was,
there.
Why do you not have the clarifying conversation around expectations? And so I left it there as a rhetorical question. So here's the answer. In too many cases, Dave and Tom, the reason you don't communicate expectations are you're afraid your board prospect will tell you no.
Oh, interesting. And I was going to say, because you don't have any.
Oh, no.
Often
you've got expectations.
Think,
you've
okay.
got expectations, but here's what happens. And this is where it just all goes. I mean, we were already going down a wrong path because we weren't recruiting with purpose and process. Now we're really, what we're getting is we're just getting whatever. We're mm-hmm. getting whoever we can get. I call those folks slot fillers. And so now we're getting people. We're just wanting yes, because we're just wanting to fill the vacancy, and they might even have faults that we know they're not going to be a good fit. The characteristics aren't there. The personality characteristics. Exactly. If you remember what Tom talked about, that board member bringing the whole personality of the board member, they're just injecting that, and it just isn't a good fit. Well, you know what? We're kind of thinking, well, you know what? If I could just get them to the altar and I get them to the I do part, I can fix them later. Well, every time I'm with a group and I pose this situation, okay, how does a fix for any kind of anyone hopeful of a long-term relationship, how does I'll fix them later usually work out?
Yeah, you can't change people. You can't fix people.
It doesn't work. And it doesn't work in a relationship. It doesn't work with board members. And board members should be a relationship. So that's why, number one, And then the, you know, the fix them later approach doesn't work. So narrowing back in on that, why don't we have this clarifying conversation again, because they may tell us no. And so, oh, by the way, Tom, now that you're on our board, congratulations, it's your first meeting. And here's what we expect you to do. And holy smoly. So if you're in the, if you're in the sector that expects your board members, for example, to do direct fundraising solicitation, and Tom is just now hearing this for the first time, or there's a hands-on approach that, that a lot of organizations want their board members to do, and that's great, that's fine, but Tom's just hearing about it at his first meeting after he's already committed. It's, I didn't sign up for this. I didn't know anything about it. And it's almost like bait and switch, right? So if you, you know, if when you're buying marketing for appliances, a new car, real estate, bait and switch could get you a nice vacation away somewhere, right? So, you know, it's illegal. So bait and switch is going to cause a lot of board members to turn off. Have the conversation in advance. And if they're not a good fit, they're not a good fit. Thank them for their interest and move on to someone who is.
So is this primarily, I mean, the fix, is it really finding the right people and getting them in the right seats? Is that essentially the bulk of the fix that we're talking about?
That is a lot of the fix. But remember, I just shared, it's a relationship. So as a professional in the business of associations, I'm encouraging you to look into the mirror. And is it possible that you could be contributing to something that's causing the relationship between you and your board chair, you and your board, to not work? You know, it's relationships. It takes two.
Give me an example of what that might be. Are we talking about personality conflicts? I mean,
let's talk about communication. Effective communication. Board members have shared with me, and I walk the readers through this process, spent a good bit of time about effective communication and how to do it, what makes it work in the book. So board members have shared with me the number one cause of boards not doing what they're supposed to do, and then all the little residual issues that pop up because of that is poor communication. Now, I'm not saying you're not communicating. That's not it. The question is, because you're sending out reports, you're having meetings, you're doing emails, and of course, those aren't being answered. Your reports aren't being read. All that stuff, it just drives staff professionals nuts, right? Well, here's part of the reason why. It's understanding that it's about effective communication. Are you communicating effectively?
Yep.
And you've got to understand that visualize for everyone in our audience today, visualize your last board meeting, and in the boardroom, all those faces in the room. Just visualize that for a moment. Well, while you're visualizing it, every single face that's popping up in your mental process, Dave, represents an individual personal preference for communication.
Mm-hmm.
We all will have different communication preferences, how we want to be communicated with, the timing of communication, how the information comes to us.
Yep.
You know, if we had time to get into a full-on discussion about personality characteristics,
right?
We talk about getting into generational differences, cultural differences. All of those affect how someone wants to be communicated with. Some people want full reports, and they want all the details. You cannot have enough details, and you cannot have enough data. Other people, on the other hand, send them a text message. What is it? But, you know, when I in NASCAR, when I worked for Bill France, he was like, bottom line, Hardy, is it raining? Yes or no? I don't need a weather forecast. That was it. Boom. Then if he had more questions, he could ask questions, right? Well, great. Here he is, Tom and Dave. You got this guy on here. I'm already overworked. I'm understaffed. I got too much to do. And all he keeps doing is giving me more stuff to do. And how am I supposed to know how all my board members want to be communicated with? Well, how would you know that, Dave?
I think I personally, I would probably, and I'm not saying this is the best answer, but I would probably rely on my EQ skills, you know, my ability to connect with people and read them individually. Sure. Sure. Aside from that, but if you have a big board, I'm not sure that's very helpful.
Can I help it be a lot more simpler than that?
Please.
How about just ask them? And individually, not in a board setting, individually. Well, great, Hardy, I don't have time to have individual conversations with 20 or 30 board members. Well, I'm going to say, if that's your answer, you're in big trouble anyway. If you're not having a schedule, I'm not saying once a week, I'm not even saying once a month, but if you're not having some regularly reoccurring one-on-one visits with your board members, you're probably headed for trouble. Let's walk back in the recruitment phase. When you're having the initial conversations, wouldn't it make sense that's a great time to include a question about and how, what are your personal communication preferences? How would you like to best be communicated with? Okay, there's your answer. And now you've got it. And then you go from there. So all of a sudden, you're not just communicating. It's not about more. It's about, are you communicating effectively? That's so, the number one problem.
We're running out of time. There's something you said right at the beginning that I need to loop back to, and then sure, we'll wrap this up. I could talk to you. Actually, there's another thing I want to know before I go into that final question. How big are boards generally in your experience with associations? I've been working with associations for 20 years, and I don't have a lot of experience working directly with boards. My experience is working with membership and learning and executive sure directors, the staff. But my understanding is some boards are gigantic, like outrageously yes big, and then others are good, you know, 8 to 12, maybe up to 20 or so. What, in your experience, is there a standard?
That is a fantastic question. So here's like a virtual high five to you, Dave. And I would say it depends on the organization. Sometimes, especially
like a true consultant, right?
It sometimes, depends. Well, let it me, depends. Let me
hire me and I'll tell you how.
Let me explain. Some associations have kind of a mandated size. You may have certain segments of the association that have slots on the predetermined. There will be someone from this particular area of, I know, for example, like for the Metal Heating Institute, I know they do auto parts, they do airplane parts, they probably do boat parts, they do train parts, they do all kinds of parts that they heat. Well, it's possible that an association like that could have a requirement, okay, we're gonna have two board members from the auto parts people, two people from the airplane people. See what I'm saying? So it just depends. It could be regional. We're going to have someone from every state. We're going to have someone from geographical parts of the country. And all that's kind of preset. So it really just depends on what is works. Now, a good friend of mine is Mary Byers. And Mary wrote the definitive book, Race to Relevance, and she's just done the 10th anniversary of her update of her book. She is a strong advocate that boards five, that's it, five. It's if five. So if you don't, if five, that's it. So five that's people? What she's pushing. And
that's
so
tiny. That's
well, nice. Well, real quick, Carney, to get some clarity to that. I've known Harrison Crover and her for many years, was there when they yeah first launched the book. And so what they go at it, instead of having a team of 11, like I have 19 board members.
Yeah.
But what he suggests is that you have five board members that have competencies in certain areas. One might be a communications marketing outreach.
Right.
One person might be huge in financial management. Another might be huge in advocacy. Another might be, so you pick your five competency areas and then you find board members that have those specialties
right.
to serve in that capacity on the board.
I push back
on that hard because I don't believe in that. I think you limit the creativity and the engagement of the board if you do that.
Right. And I consider Mary a great friend of mine, and I turn to her for counsel all the time, but I'm with you. I say you have to go with what works. Now, if you really want to get the willies in the Chamber of Commerce world, in the United Way world, it's not unusual at all to have 40, 50, 60 board members. But there's a reason why they have that. It's not about good governance. It relates to raising money and influence.
Yeah,
so,
right.
That makes a whole sense. Different. So it kind of depends.
Well, I think we're out of time to continue the conversation. We could probably go another 45 minutes. The way Tom and I like to wrap these up is we'll have a little takeaway. Tom will give us his key takeaway, something that struck him in the conversation today. I'll do the same, and then we'll ask you for that. And it may be a moment of epiphany, or maybe it's something that you want to leave the audience with. So, Tom, what do you got? What's your key takeaway?
So my big takeaway is just the conversation of who's the head coach and head scout. So I think that's where it all starts. If no one's actually having conversations and looking at the overall picture of each of people you feel could serve on the board, because remember, most boards only have two or three, four people that come up each year to put in a new board seat. So it's only four people you got to find. And you might look and say, okay, the next year I'm going to identify eight people that half of them we need to maybe look at being on the board. That's not a lot of time and easy to invest in your natural conversations with those kind of people. So I think the CEO, executive director, whatever you call yourself, and his two or three top key executives need to have that mindset when they walk out and start having conversations with members around the country. I think you need to say, you think you need to appoint who that head coach, head scouting staff team is of three or four that can identify those people. So you can make sure you got a pipeline.
So that's my big pipeline. Good takeaway.
One of the, I think when you guys were piling on my comment about no time, I think that was probably a key takeaway moment for me. And Hardy, you said, how bad do you want it? And what that means to me is the translation for that is around priorities. And right, there's tons of people in the world that have their flag, their soapbox. For you, it's get your board in line. For me, it's member engagement. For Tom, it may be something else. I just got off the phone with our friends from BettyBot. BettyBot is all about knowledge transfer. And so we all have our stakes in the ground, and the people that work with us are those that prioritize the flag that we are carrying. And so I think that's where it's so important to find the right match. In this case, we're not talking about boards right now. We're talking about finding the right match of who has the priorities of wanting to work on their board right now, which is a lot of people, and who doesn't. And the ones that want to work on the board, they're going to find the time because it's a priority. And those that don't, they're not going to hire you because they don't have the priorities. So where it gets sticky is if the executive director makes it a priority, but other people are like, you got too many priorities right now. So anyway, that was my key takeaway, is like this concept of priorities.
Well, I think that's an excellent one, Dave. And I would suggest that for that executive director, that CEO of an association that's not quite sure about that, just think, may I leave you with this thought, is look, a little work on the front end will save you a lot of frustration and angst and wasted time later. So you actually can create time on the front end.
Hardy Smith, thank you so much. HardySmith.com if you want to learn more about Hardy, if you want to see what he has on the docket, his speaking engagements, his book, anything you want to know about Hardy Smith. You can go to hardysmith.com. Hardy, thank you so much for joining us today. Really appreciate your time.
Dave and Tom, thank you so very much. Appreciate the opportunity.
We hope you gained some inspiration that will help you run an efficient and effective association just like a business, and maybe laugh a little with us. If you have a topic you would like to hear us talk about, or if you just want to reach out to us for any reason, you can contact us at tom@tommorson.biz or dave@propfuel.com.
Give us a review if you haven't already, and don't forget, subscribe and share with your friends.